Over this past year, I think I may have started every single sermon with some version of this. These are challenging times! Have you heard me say that before? Have you felt it in your bones before? Yes! I mean, this week it's a repressive tax bill and the ongoing revelations about the Russian interference in the last election. And then the ongoing hashtag MeToo revelations. I've written my blog this month about that, so please check that out on the BBUUF website. And this, of course, is layered upon the assaults on almost every vulnerable population. Women, women, immigrants, transgender people, refugees, Muslims, you know the litany. The wanton grab for consolidated power among white supremacist elites is staggering and often just plain cruel. It's fracturing decades of work on behalf of human dignity for all people, decades of work that I know many of you have been engaged in. The image right now is of trying to desperately plug holes in a massive leaky bucket of water, right? Or some kind of a Where's Waldo for hope. Like, where is hope right now? It can be really hard to find. And the ongoing enormity of the need can really feel overwhelming. I've heard you talk about it. I know you feel it. How or where or in what do I engage? What if I'm not a natural activist and my life is already so full of its own challenges? I'm at capacity. I know you felt it. It's hard not to feel it when the needs are so great. But I'm here to tell you that religiously, we were made for these times. Unitarians and especially Universalists have offered a theology of hope since our inception. When the white colonialists came to this country, they predominantly brought with them a strict Calvinist theology that preached of God's divine plan to separate the saved from the unsaved, the pure from the depraved. And you can see the seeds of white supremacy culture right there in that theology that was part of the inception of this country. Tight, one right way thinking, a theology of scarcity that pits people against each other, that dominated almost to the point of extinction the native people of this land and enslaved millions of others. It's right there in that theology of a God that punishes and of some select elite. Now, in walks Universalism into this system. Universalism that brought a radically new understanding of God to those white colonialists. Give them not hell, but hope and courage is the Universalist motto. And although that was falsely attributed to John Murray, a British minister who came to this country in 1770, he was the one who started some of our first hope-filled churches in this country, 1770. So those words were attributed to him, although they were first written in the 20th century by Unitarian minister and religious professor Alfred S. Cole. It was a fictional story he wrote about John Murray. And those words were said to be the revelation that John Murray received. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. It aptly speaks to the origins of this faith and caught on so that at some point we just assume John said it. But the seeds of Universalism invited our ancestors to imagine a loving God incapable of condemning anyone to hell, with a radical sense of universal salvation based on respect for the inherent worth and dignity of all people. This was hugely radical. And our Unitarian ancestors joined with them in focusing how we could build the beloved community right here, right now in this world, a community of love and hope that didn't have to wait to some afterlife by the work of our hands and by the saving grace of community. Now, I think about the people in the pews over the course of our nation's history, a history that included a war against Britain, a Spanish-American war, the presidency of Andrew Jackson and his cruel treatment of Native Americans, a bloody civil war, two world wars, women's rights movements, a bloody civil rights movement, the war in Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? The list of cruelties that have gone on. But I'm thinking about the people in the pews and how many of them felt hopeless. Felt hopeless. And in those times, people gathered in congregations like ours for hope and inspiration. And out of our Unitarian and our Universalist congregations arose suffragettes like Susan B. Anthony, who led the women's right to vote. Abolitionists like Theodore Parker, who kept a gun and a sword in his desk in case someone came because he was hiding fugitive slaves. Pacifists like Clarence Russell Skinner, who spoke out during World War I. Civil rights activists like Viola Liuzzo, who died in Selma. Gay rights activists like San Francisco minister Harry Schofield, who was performing gay ceremonies of union as early as 1956. All of these people rose out of this theology. It was cultivated in their gathering in congregational life. But I also wonder about the communities over time of congregations, if they too as a community felt the overwhelm when the wheels of justice and compassion seemed to be turning backwards. I wonder how many of those ministers felt, preaching a theology of love, justice, and hope when hope was hard to find year in and year out. And how those congregations over time discerned the what and the how of addressing all the injustices that were so great. And I say this because more than once this year, I've sat with groups of leaders in this congregation, leaders of various committees and councils and task forces who needed to acknowledge to themselves that we don't, as a community, have the capacity to serve all the needs we see before us at this time. And how painful that realization is to recognize our own limitations, personal limitations, and communal limitations. We just don't have enough fingers to plug all the holes. And it is deeply difficult to rest in that realization. The needs for mental health care, and this I've sat and listened to these conversations this year, the desire to meet the needs for mental health care in a nation that vastly underserves the mentally ill, the desires to meet the needs for education around the GLBTQ issues, those whose rights are being trampled upon right now, and the needs of immigrants as their families become more endangered. Needs and desires to serve that have come from you in all of your love and caring for the world. I've sat in many rooms where there's lots of heavy-heartedness as we realize that if we try to plug every hole within the construct of this institution, the whole bucket might explode around us. It's a hard thing to live with. But that does not mean that we do nothing. And in fact, we are doing so very much. The words of 19th century white Unitarian minister Edward Everett Hale come to mind. He wrote, "I am only one," or we might say, "We are only one congregation, and we cannot do everything. But we can still do something. And just because we cannot do everything, we will not refuse to do the something that we can do." In the midst of the honest and painful acknowledgments of the limitations of our capacity, we can find hope in lifting up all that is happening here amongst us, feeding the homeless, caring for the sexual health of our children, providing toys and warm clothes to those in need, providing space for Latinx parents groups to organize here in our building, offering ourselves in companionship to the sick amongst us. And perhaps our greatest calling as a religious institution is providing spiritual nurturance so you may go forth and do the one thing that you are called to do. Now, just yesterday, Karen Axe reminded me of the powerful work of TIES, the Trans Youth Education Support Group. And I asked her to speak to us about it today so you can hear in a first-person account just one of the many stories of hope that this congregation has nurtured. Karen?
Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. My child was 7 when I searched the internet, trying to understand her anger and pain. Finding a Barbara Walters special with a 6-year-old transgender girl named Jazz, I saw my own child and I reached out to her mother for help and information. Later, when asked, my child informed me that she was in fact not a boy. She was a girl. She had to live as a girl. Tears of shock and desperation followed. Her Olympic dreams lay shattered on the floor. Her sorrow at the loss and certainty of being unlike anyone else in the entire world was suppressed by the unfounded joy she felt at her newfound authenticity. Holding her aloneness as my own, and despite living in a conservative community, I believed by speaking up and speaking out that the world would understand and learn to welcome her as their own. The world did not understand. Watching my children swim, I fell to my knees in shock as I learned that our story was going to be on the national news and local radios. Knowing there must be others, I went on a desperate search for a friend for my child who could understand her, and I found 5 others. Initially, we were a band of 5 families locally, 20 families nationally. We found solace and comfort in each other as we each worked to make the world safer for our own children in their school, their family, and their activities. Slowly we grew, supporting each other as our stories exploded all over the press, and our families were investigated by social services. Each time, the hatred and the backlash was frightening with every story. Each time was also an opportunity to share and to teach. Each time, more of us shared our lives. We lived with a mantra, one heart at a time. We watched the world change. It was a painful, convulsive growth. It was extraordinary to witness. Then came the backlash this year, from this last year and a half. Far too often, I have felt hopeless and helpless, falling to my knees once again. Next weekend, our Colorado TIES families will be celebrating 10 years together of friendship and support. Looking back reminds me that the greatest moments of understanding and growth came from the times when the comments were the ugliest and the world seemed the most dangerous. Yet we spoke from a place of truth, a place of love and hope for our children's future. The bigger the fury, the greater opportunity for opening hearts and minds. While we heard the voices of the angry and the ignorant, the rest of the world listened to our hearts. Today, TIES is growing rapidly and expanding in capacity in unbelievable ways. It's like a light growing in the shadows, just waiting to explode out from the darkness. So here I am picking myself up again, willing myself to stand against the hate. I may be a single voice, but I'm witness to the incredible power of voices speaking out in truth, love, and hope. Boulder Valley Universal Unitarian Universalist Fellowship has been part of this movement. Some of the first meetings of TIES were held here under the confidential tent of this building. And I have received so much spiritual and personal support amongst this community over the years. The social justice work in our BVUF fellowship is so much bigger than and encompasses so many more communities than that small band that changed the world. Imagine what this band of committed citizens can do when we ignore the ignorance and speak out so the world can listen to our hearts.
I would say, Karen, you are the transgender rights version of Susan B. Anthony. So thank you. One of many. But. So I have an invitation for you. In these times when hope can feel so hard to find, take time to look at the many beautiful acts of love and caring that persist. And take time to fill your heart and soul with the spiritual sustenance that it needs to endure and grow and create change in these times, and to find your way to bring our hope-filled faith to life within and beyond the walls of this community. May this be our promise and always our prayer. Amen.